Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by today. Well, today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And last night, I did a little bit of research, and again, early this morning. And you're not going to believe what I found out about my Bullies to Buddies workbook that all of you have shared with Shelley and I for the past year and a half after having Israel Kalman, on our show for several months, once a week, and doing all kinds of work with him to understand what the objective is to Bullies to Buddies. And I really believe we've got it. I really believe we understand the difference between bullying and real abuse. I believe we understand the fact that our kids have got to learn better social skills to be able to deal with the unkindness that befalls all of us in everyday life. So imagine my surprise when I found a story about a high school or middle school that actually got involved with the Bullies to Buddy workbook and probably even invested in it, but didn't have all the things Izzy offers as a part of the program, some of the training, some of the one-on-ones, all of that kind of stuff. So I'm going to share with you all the comments that I heard or read on this site last night and this morning. First, I'm going to bring in Shelley because she's going to be shocked at this as well, because we are so enamored by this program because we get it. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Renee.
How you doing, honey?
I'm doing real good. Curious to hear what you found out.
Well, you know how we talk about all the time interpretation, and you watch a movie and you interpret it this way, I watch it and I interpret it another way, or mm-hmm. we both sit and listen to the same lecture and we walk away with different feelings about what we heard. One of the things that Izzy is so, so adamant about is that his workbook is utilized by professionals. And he wants to believe that when he leaves a workbook in the hands of professionals, that it will be utilized to its full capacity. Well, it appears as though, and I'm going to go to the site where the story is, but it appears as though this teacher, this principal, for a fifth grade class, sent home flyers that advises kids that are bullied to not tattle on their tormentors.
No, for God's sake.
And they have pictures on this site of the title of this story is Nebraska Principal Sorry for Don't Tattle Flyer. And up at the top, they have a picture of rule number 7, do not tell on bullies. The bullies hate their victims. The reason bullies hate their victims is because the victims tell on them, makes the bullies want to retaliate. I mean, all the same things that you and I have read, you know, all the same things that we've talked about in the past. Rule number 8, don't be a sore loser. Well, taken out of context, it sounds like you're asking your kid to be a wussy.
Right.
It acts like you're telling your kid to suffer in silence. It talks like, you know, if you just read these little bits of what he's got in the workbook and don't absorb the context first, then of course it sounds like, you know, matter of fact, on one of our shows, we offended a regular listener. You remember?
Yes, a
regular listener called in and wanted to talk about what he endured as a student in a middle school and a high school. And he was hurt by the fact that he didn't feel that he should be the one that had to bend over backwards to appease the bully. And all of us kind of in unison said, that's not what we want you to do either.
Right.
You know, we don't want that. We just want you to use your brain instead of your brawn. And if you will, be just a little bit more tricky. Understand that you, tattling, is going to bring on just more of the same. You, whining, is going to, entice your tormentor into doing more. You know, I've seen good parents that I know love their children. The harder their kid screams, the more pissed off they get.
Yep.
Right? I mean, we've all seen that. And it doesn't mean that parent doesn't love their child. It's just, it's like a trigger. You know, it's like a trigger. And I think that taking this workbook is a big workbook. I mean, we've read it. In some chapters, we've read twice and gone over twice, several chapters. But we've read it from cover to cover. And if you pay attention, he never changes the guts. He never changes the guts. He gives you different ideas. He tries to touch on what would work for everybody. You know, like I could say, Shelley and I, we've talked about this before, Shelley and I have pretty different personalities. I'm very laid back. Shelley has more of an aggressive nature. But she's smart. So at a very early age, she understood that just making somebody angrier at her wasn't going to get her what she needed. So, but she has to look at things from a different point of view. I, on the other hand, need to hear the result. I don't. I'm not. I can be aggressive. Don't get me wrong. I can be a real, B-I-T-C-H, if you will. I can be, and I know that about myself. But it's not where I prefer to be, and it's not the first thing that wells up inside of me.
Right.
And we can't help that, by the way. That emotion that comes up in us as adults is usually structured when we're too little to know how to stop it or know what to do with it. So it becomes almost habitual. But you do learn how to control it so that it works for you instead of against you. If everything,
right.
You know, if you pay attention to who you are as a person and evaluate it, and spend some time. Shelley and I have both talked on lots of occasions about reading and educating yourself about your own self.
Right.
There's lots of places out there where, I mean, you know, you can't say to your mommy when you're 8 years old, why does this make me so mad? I can't help myself. I've had kids say that to me. I've had kids say to me, I can't help it. I just get too mad and I can't stop it. And mommy just is going to say to you, you just have to learn how to control it because she doesn't know what else to say. It will take searching on your part to find out what will work for you to help you control the parts of your personality that are out of control right now. The Bullies to Buddies manual actually helps teach kids, including bullies. We've come to a big epiphany also with bullies. All bullies are being bullied. Almost all bullies in one way or another. That's why they're such a bully in their outside life, is because somebody else is bullying them. So it is that, you know, that circle of life that we all admire. All these bad things have a part in that as well. So imagine, though, I listened to some of the things that were said, and I was like, oh my gosh, what? I don't know how they derived this. Some parents of fifth graders at Zeman Elementary in Lincoln complained and posted angry comments on Facebook, the Lincoln Journal Star reported on Thursday. Zeman principal Donna Williams apologized directly to the families on Wednesday for wording of the flyer, and the district posted the apology on its Facebook page. The flyer was sent home with good intentions, said Williams. Unfortunately, it contained advice that did not accurately reflect LPS best practices regarding response to bullying incidents. District Student Services Director Russ Ewing said the LPS philosophy, that's Lincoln Public School, ask the bully to stop, walk away. If the bully continues, tell a parent or a teacher. On the contrary, the flyer advises that students should not tell on bullies because the number one reason bullies hate their victims is because victims tell on them. It doesn't say that in the book. It's not even worded like that. It talks about right. The fact that you're not going to get somebody to like you by tattling on them. Telling makes the bully want to retaliate, it says. Tell an adult only when a real injury or crime, theft of something valuable, has occurred. He also doesn't talk about stealing stuff. See, it just bothers me because, you know, I mean, these are people that are leaders, Shell. And again, the leaders are the ones that fall short. They might better just give the book to the kids and let them read it. They probably would have done a better job of deciphering it.
Yeah,
would we keep our friends if...
Yep.
Yeah, doesn't it? It says, would we keep our friends if we tattled on them? District spokeswoman Mary Kay Roth said the flyer was not approved for distribution and was mistakenly included in folders of student work sent home with the fifth graders on Tuesday. Now, there's a big cop-out if I ever heard one.
Really?
It's a staff issue, so we're taking care of the staffing error. It wasn't supposed to be sent home. Now, quite frankly, I don't agree to any of that. But here's some replies in the comments, which I always think are interesting. Now, this is somebody who just read it, doesn't know anything about it, obviously, and states, the pamphlet should never have been written in the first place. And then we have somebody, it's based on the Bullies to Buddies program. The heart of the program is that most instances of bullying are not the work of a psychopathic little kid. It's usually just an outgoing, popular kid who thinks he's being funny and a less popular kid who feels like an outsider and is hypersensitive to being teased. The program teaches kids who seem to be bully magnets to develop a better perspective of what actually might be going on. How to laugh at themselves rather than being so sensitive, a trait that popular students often possess, and how to reach out to the popular kids in an open and friendly way rather than constantly tattling on them and further ostracizing themselves from the group. It's a departure from most school programs that encourage kids to tell on the bullies for even minor infractions. He keeps calling me Freckle Face, for instance, which only ostracizes the student even more. If the student can learn not to be so easily offended and to laugh and say something like, yep, I'm a freckle face, crazy, isn't it, with a friendly smile, then the situation gets diffused and the student becomes more and more liked rather than more and more hated. It's a controversial program, but a lot of people swear by it. Next one that was beautiful. And she really gets it, obviously. Her name is Renee Scott. It doesn't really say who she is or where she's from or if she's a teacher. Rose Thompson, same mentality of the hoodlums who say, snitches get stitches. I feel sorry for the kids in school today. So many pressures on them. Well, I think that that's just an off-the-wall statement and didn't serve any purpose. Quite honestly.
It's not snitch. It's not. We're not talking about criminal acts. We're talking about the essence of the book is not to, like this woman said it beautifully, not to run to your teacher or your parents every time somebody calls you freckle face, you know. But if somebody's punching you, slamming you into your locker, stealing stuff from you, that's not bullying. And that's the whole point of the workbook, to make that very, very clear. We're not talking about physical assaults. We're not talking about you being afraid to go to school. But if somebody's calling you freckle face or pizza face or stupid or ugly or whatever, you know, you shouldn't get so bent out of shape about that you don't want to go to school anymore, or that you're ashamed of yourself, or that you buy into it. And that's what the book is trying to teach kids, is to be more lighthearted and not take things so seriously, because that hypersensitivity, it's a perfect word she used, because that's what kids that get bullied are. They're hypersensitive. They take it so seriously, so much to heart, it hurts their feelings. And that's why the kids who are bullies have fun messing with them, because they get these emotional responses, which in their little teenage mind is funny. As you grow older, things like that become less funny, because then, you know, hopefully as you grow into an adult, you tap into it. I know a lot of adults today that remember being a jerk when they were in school, and now they regret it. They say, oh, you know, I wish I hadn't been so mean to that kid. You know, sometimes to this day I still think about it. But at the time, I was a jerky kid and it seemed funny to me. But now as an adult, there's that one kid in their past that they think about and it bothers them. I've spoken to a couple adults that have reminiscences like that, you know, memories like that. And but that woman, I really have to applaud her, because it seems like she read the book and understood it. And using the word hypersensitivity is really quite accurate. It's a good term to use.
Well, and I think, you know, you're gonna be, this is gonna make both of us a little bit angry, though. The a lot of the comments are, again, people, I don't know, I think they talk before they assess. Or, you know, remember me telling you all those years ago, my sister saying to me, Barbara, saying to me, how come I always get in trouble and you don't get in trouble? And I said, because before I say something, I say it to myself. If it makes me mad or hurts my feelings, I don't say it out loud. And Barbara went, oh, my God, you do that with everything? And I was like, no, just the things that I think are, you know, a little bit more sensitive. And she was like, I don't have time to do that. And
yeah, I remember that. I think that's
you know.
But the way Barbara is, the way Barbara was, is more common, unfortunately, in our world. And that is why there's so much miscommunication, because people don't take the time to filter. I mean, I use this as a joke all the time. I'll be talking to somebody and something blurts out of their mouth. And I look at them and I say, do you not have your filter turned on today? Or did you forget to put it in or something? I said, it's like these things just come out of people's, adults, you know, grown people.
I know.
In public, and things just come out of their mouths that are, like, completely inappropriate, unkind, sometimes just, you know, there's one thing to be silly and goofy, that's cool, but being inappropriate can be embarrassing, can be hurtful, and it's like, wow, what happened to the filter today? That shouldn't have come out of your mouth. You know, it's one thing to say it to be private, but not in a group of people. And I know more adults today that seem to lack having a filter. It's like whatever, if it pops into their mind, it comes out their mouth. And as an adult, we're supposed to be beyond that. We're supposed to have a certain sense of decorum, a certain sense of self-restraint. That doesn't mean you have to be a stiff person, but what it means is that if you're going to have a sense of humor, you have an appropriate sense of humor. You don't have a sense of humor that's cruel or you know, or unsavory or something like that. You know, that you have a sense of humor that people can genuinely laugh with you and not be shocked by you. And I think that's where a lot of are kind of going out. It's like they're testing the limits of social, proper social behavior.
Or just for the shock value, to see how many, there's five people standing in a group, and lots of times you can do this. You can look around a room, and you listen to somebody's story, and you can almost hear out loud everybody else is thinking the same thing you're thinking. But it's inappropriate. But because you think you know that everybody's feeling the same way, you say it out loud. And everybody, you know, shoots you that look like, I can't believe you said that out loud. But I see that happen all the time.
Yep.
And the truth of the matter is that when you have a thought about somebody else's behavior, somebody else's way of explaining themselves even, nobody really cares. You know, nobody really cares. Mm-hmm. Unless you're the wisest prophet in the land, which I don't think any of us are, nobody really gives a shit what you think about something else. So you're a bigger perpetrator than the person that said it the first time.
And, you know, the funny part about it is a lot of time when I hear these types of inappropriate comments where somebody has just made an assessment of another individual that's embarrassing or cruel or insensitive or something, and then I look at them for the way they act, and I'm like, what you just said. I said, wow, you're like the
yeah.
worst perpetrator in this arena.
Yeah.
And you're
yeah.
acting like what they did was, like, so over the top. Have you ever, like, watched your own behavior? Have you ever? Yeah.
yeah.
And it's like a lot of the times the most outrageous comments come from people that are worse offenders of that thing they just brought to everybody's attention. And sometimes that's where the shock value comes in, because it's like they're looking at the source of the comment.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know. It's and if you are the kind of person like you and I are, when we're sitting in a big group of people, we listen to everybody. And there's been times when we've just looked at each other and smiled. I used to get a big kick out of it in later years at the Institute at managers meetings when things were changing. And I'd look around the room and find a face of somebody that I'd been close to for a very long time, our chef, our greenhouse manager, people like that, our lead secretary and stuff like that. And I'd look at them, and we'd both have the same look on our face, because we'd be like, oh, my God. But the point here, in a situation like this, in a situation where somebody has put a workbook out and somebody is trying to make a difference, and my own opinion is that he has made a difference, I appreciate the Bullies to Buddies workbook. I don't take it out of context. I know that there will always be extenuating circumstances to every single solitary interaction that there is between human beings. I know that. 66 years has taught me that. But if you can keep something like this that doesn't hurt anybody, that keeps things on an even keel, it's worth everything. It's
mm-hmm.
worth everything. But you have to understand it. You have to understand what it's teaching. Now, obviously, if every day you get off the school bus and every day this person makes a comment to you that is hurtful, that other people hear, that you can't take anymore, and you've not retaliated, you've not done anything, and all you've done is try to stay out of the way of that person, or maybe one day you did smile and say, sorry you feel that way about me, or, geez, that's not true, or anything like that, and this person is relentless with you, I could psychologically spend time with you myself and explain to you that there's a reason that person is not leaving you alone, and it probably doesn't have anything to do with hatred. It probably has something to do with something else. But if that is on a continuum for you, and it's eating away at you and hurting you inside, then I think you need to tell somebody. Absolutely, positively need to tell somebody. But I also don't think if he or she has picked on you once on the bus or said something about what you had on today or the way you smell or who cut your hair, you know, whatever, and they said it once, then I think you need to take that into perspective and deal with it. Who cares?
Right, exactly.
But the book teaches us a bigger lesson than that.
Right. One of the things I get from this story, the way we started it, we're talking about the Nebraska principle, is that it's going back to what we always talk about, and that's adults not being appropriate role models. This principle...
Amen.
This principal either spot read the workbook, went to the short list without reading the backup text that explains the short list. And I know a lot of people that read books like that. They'll go to the recap without reading what leads up to the recap because they don't want to be bothered reading all that text. I know people who do that kind of stuff. But what you don't understand
do
in a recap, it's an abbreviated version. It doesn't give you all the details. Because the person that writes the book assumes you've read the first part of the book, which goes into the deep details, and now they're just giving you like a refresher, so they don't need to go through all that explanation again. They're giving you a short, like a quick reference type of section. But I know people that get these type of books and only read the quick reference section. They don't read the text that explains it, and it sounds that's like what this principal did, because how a memo could have been constructed that way shows that the individual that wrote that memo did not understand the essence of the book. The harmful thing about that is that if anybody does recognize it's From Bullies to Buddies, it makes it look like the program is not realistic. It makes it look like the program doesn't work. Meanwhile, all it was is that it was misused. It was misconstrued, misunderstood, and misused. It was put into action in an erroneous fashion, and it could have caused a lot of problems, sending out completely the wrong message, you know, because it should never have been done in a memo anyway. This is something that should have been done in a teacher, you know, like in one of these assemblies that they have where they have all the parents come, like a teacher-parent conference night or something, and in the auditorium, and explain to the parents, look, this is a workbook we're working with. We recommend you all go on the website and read some of the materials. It's, you know, very thought-provoking. But we've decided to work with this. You know, not that the parents will have to get the workbook because it's huge and it's relatively expensive, you know, but they can go on the website. That would have been a much better way to handle it, to get the, you know, let the parents know what you're reading. Let them go to the website. If you're going to send a flyer home, you send a flyer home and you say, we would like all the parents to go on this website and start perusing some of the free materials because we're going to have an assembly next week and we're going to start implementing some of the things that are discussed in the professional workbook that we're using. You know, that would have been appropriate to send home in a memo, but you don't excerpt out one of the rules without any explanation and just send it home in a dry letter like that. Very, very irresponsible. And it makes the program... and it has nothing to do with the program. Izzy's program, to my estimation, is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
That's the way I feel too. But even the comments, except for the one that was obviously somebody who's very educated on the issue, and these other people are not. Something isn't right about this. If the flyer wasn't supposed to go home, where was it supposed to go? That's a good question, but it doesn't show much thought. Sorry, they apologize. The apology is a little too late and frankly represents the reality of many public schools' support. They all talk a good game until you approach them with an issue, then the games begin. I'm really sure what that one means. Someone put it together with the intention of sending it home, the principal, the teacher, nothing like teaching children to let the bullies win. Unbelievable. Schools are getting worse and worse about protecting their students from bullies. It has happened here in my town where we only have one public elementary, one middle school, and one high school. The schools won't admit there are bullies because it makes them look bad. Denying and refusing help makes them look worse, in my opinion. If it wasn't supposed to be sent home, it's just one of the problems with this. The most important issue is why was it even in print? I just posted about this story yesterday on my blog. Then somebody writes, and this is kind of sad, albeit amusing. Listen to him lie. District Student Services Director Russ Ewing said the LPS philosophy is ask the bully to stop, walk away. If the bully continues, tell a parent or teacher.
The LPS philosophy is flawed. It should be ask the bully to stop, walk away. If the bully continues, retaliate. I would have no problem if one of my children got suspended for self-defense.
Wow.
Wonderful. Yeah. It sure does sound like a staffing problem. The person who wrote this should not be working in a school district. This is because they think that they derived what the workbook is about by this simple story. I'm going to be unpopular here, but I would like to know first if there is real bullying issue in the school, or if in truth there are a lot of kids who have been taught to tell of friends and classmates over anything. I know kid etiquette. When I was growing up, was you don't tell. I'm not talking about serious cases of bullying, but normal kid crap. Are we bringing up a generation of tattletales? I know I brought my kids up to think before they told, and they were punished if the sole reason they told on someone was to get in trouble. Sounds like my mother. I am not talking about when a child is being seriously hurt emotionally or physically, but as a society, we are letting the lines between the blurred. Oh, let me read that again. But as a society, are we letting the lines be blurred between what is serious issue and what one the kids need to work through themselves? Now, this lady should read the book. This lady, if she read the book, she would understand what Izzy's trying to teach because she kind of gets it already.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, and then the last one is fire them. You know, there's a good statement. So I guess the biggest part of this story, and I want to, on the second half of our show today, we're going to talk about another source of bullying that's going on with a story that we talk about on the air all the time. But first, to close up this story, for those of you who only listened to the show a few times or only know a little bit about the Bullies to Buddies program, it is purely and simply about the Golden Rule. The essence of his whole workbook is based on the Golden Rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And if you understand that, if you get the gist of that golden rule, then you will understand this. It isn't about retaliation. It isn't about tattling. It isn't about who can hit harder, who can run faster. It's not about any of those things. It's about teaching your children the social graces of being able to get along with people who maybe are not so easy to get along with. And maybe if you can teach your child to do that, your child won't be one of those kids that are not so easy to get along with, if you get my drift. So, but when we know this is going on in the schools and then we address some of the adult issues that are in the world today, right now we're in mid we vote very soon. There's a big debate going on between Rick Scott and Charlie Crist. And the newest thing was Rick Scott got jealous and pouted like a 7-year-old because Charlie Crist had a fan under his podium and Rick Scott didn't. I mean, I'm not even talking about who I like better. I just want to say, what kind of leadership is that? What does that say to the 13-year-old who's watching TV and has a little bit of interest in politics? What does that say to them? You have all of this around us, right? I mean, God, Shelley, I'm not going out there. He got a fan and I didn't. Oh, my good God.
I know.
Why didn't he just say to one of his many assistants, you know what, that's smart. I should have a fan under mine, too. It's going to be hot as hell out there. Will somebody run out and get me a fan? Why couldn't he have done that? That's what I would have done as an adult.
That's right. And meanwhile, this guy is richer than rich, and it's like, and he doesn't have a grasp on how to get things done.
Evidently not.
Like you said, he's got assistants all around him. And that's what you do. Instead of pouting and acting out, which is very childish, you know, but to do some of the things he's done is kind of childish anyway. I'm not a Scott fan. I don't like some of the laws he passed. I'm very much against his politics. Charlie Crist, unfortunately, it's like the lesser of two evils. He's done some things that aren't so cool either, but Scott has done... I don't understand why Scott's not in prison, to be honest with you, with some of the nonsense he's been involved in, and that as a politician, he's just allowed to skate it. I don't understand how politicians can be involved in illegal activities and somehow have the wherewithal to maintain themselves. It shocks me. And some of the stuff he's been involved in is extremely shocking to me.
Yeah, me too. But again, it's all about leadership. And when you want the world to run on a role of or a continuum of good and heartfelt energy, it's hard when the people that are the most, I hate to use this word because for me it's not successful, but that's how it's viewed, is successful, is to be, you know, people that step on you, people that would much rather know that the $10 bill landed in their pocket instead of yours and would never consider giving you five of it. That's what I see all around me with politicians, everywhere I look. The only person I've ever listened to talk that is really well off, that made me feel like he might care a little bit, was the dude that I talked about a few weeks ago, and now I can't even think of his name, the Englishman there that's so rich, but he does so much for his people. And that's how I felt about Jim Moran, too, and a lot of controversy about Jim Moran.
Richard Branson.
But
And there's a lot of very, very, very wealthy people who are extremely philanthropic. They're always giving back. They set up foundations, you know, they donate. They donate their own personal time. They have programs within their companies. I mean, it's, you know, I know several of them. Troy McClain is another one who's very much like that. Very, very, very wealthy man, but is always, in fact, he was, now that I mentioned his name, I really got to try to contact him because I have contact information for him. But he runs a whole bullies program, anti-bullying, because his sister was bullied. And she's a special needs student. He loves her dearly, but because she speaks with an impediment and things like that, she got picked on. So he has a whole anti-bullying program, and I've been wanting to contact him to see if he would help promote Izzy's program. Maybe he could partner with Izzy in some way, because he's got the financial resources to really make it, you know, spread more. So now that I've mentioned it on the show, it'll put it back in the front of my brain. But, you know, here he's a very, very wealthy man, and all he cares about is doing good and helping people. A very, very generous, very philanthropic nature.
Well, and again, you know, there's never quick, there's never quick answers to big problems. There just isn't. But this answer or this suggestion to teach the young people to care about others like they care about themselves is important. And it could lead to many wonderful things. It will. Let's put it this way. Thinking like that leads to more wonderful things than bad things. And that's a choice that has to start being made. Now, mm-hmm. I want to kind of segue into another story of bullying at a much, much higher level. And it has to do with a story that we've talked about on our show on several occasions. It's about the different adoption agencies, the what they will do to take custody of a newborn who is in high demand to the poor folks that are unable to reproduce on their own and want a child so bad and have much to offer, etc. All good things, all good concepts. Orphanages and adoption have been around for a very, very, very long time. However, as in most things like that, where the intricacies of the paperwork and the mood swings and the indecision of people play a very integral role in adoption and being the adoptive parents, being the mother and father, more often than not just the mother that's giving up a child for reasons that they think are unsurpassable to them in the moment. Now, we've done several shows to talk about how that those beginning stages are handled and whether or not they're being handled the right way or whether or not they're taking advantage of a young woman who is in such great duress that she cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel. So we got kind of involved in a fight against an adoption agency. The birth mom versus the adoption agency. And the story is still lumbering on, and it's been arduous, to say the least, and it has been very traumatic for the mother in question. And I kind of stepped back because the mudslinging was getting to a point where, because I'm not there and I really am not privy to everything, I didn't want to be in the middle of it anymore. I felt like it was getting too, too involved, just a big mess. However, I do keep an eye on it. And I keep an eye on it through Facebook because there's many sites that I was introduced to of a lot of women all over that have already been through this, who have given up a child and tried to stop in the middle of the transaction, and in some cases won that change of heart, and in some cases did not. Now, bullying at its epitome of bullying is taking place. Every skeleton, every bad word, everything that has been said or done by this mom is being dragged through all different kinds of media, all through the courts. Now people are questioning her integrity with her other five children. They're making up stories to say, well, you know, she lost this one, and back in, 10,000 BC, you know, we saw her doing this, and she got drunk one night and did that, and I started reading all of this a few days ago, and I did touch base with this mom, and I said, you know, the sad part about fighting for what you want is people who don't want you to win will pull out all the stops. And that's what they've done. But this is bullying at its absolute worst. Bullying at its absolute worst. Because that would mean she'd have to run around and stomp out every story, Shell. That would mean every time she reads something about herself, taken out of context, or even just a blatant lie, what kind of energy would you have to do to run around and say, oh, no, that one's not true. Well, yeah, I did do that, but I didn't do it the way you said it. You just have to shut up and feel sorry for the people that are spreading all that hatred. Because how's it going to serve her now? How is she going to stop this now? Because now it is out of control. She has to hope and pray that everything can get pulled back in and the powers that be and just listen to the truth and make...
Well, truth always has a way of eventually coming out. The easiest way to handle that kind of a rumor mill is to just put out one statement. Say, I'm seeing rumors coming out of the woodwork. You know, most of them are not true at all. Some of them that are true are only half-truths, and if you knew the rest of the story, you wouldn't think anything of it at all. Say, I do go out from time to time and have a drink, but I've never been irresponsible with my children. You know, she could make a statement that kind of diffuses all the rumors that are out there. Very, you know, less is more, just a few targeted comments, and say, you know, this is what happens when people try to fight for what is right and what is honest and what is ethical against a machine that isn't. And that's what I feel like, that I'm fighting against a machine that has no heart or conscience. It's just trying to achieve an outcome. And, you know, say, unfortunately, it's something that, you know, that happens a lot when people try to fight for justice. But the bottom line is this. The only thing that matters is that, number one, I am a good mom. I'm a loving mom. Secondly, I was not coached appropriately. And once I, you know, she could make a couple of pointed facts and say, and that's all that matters about this. You know, this is the reality, that I should get my child back for these reasons. And that's all that matters. Everything else is mudslinging and diversion, trying to take people away from the actual facts and the actual misconduct of this agency. And that's all this is. It's a diversionary tactic. You know, so sometimes you get ahead of it. And, you know, like you find out that somebody found out something salacious about you. So you go into court the next day and you present it first. It completely diffuses the other side that was going to use it against you, because here you put it out first and now it loses any of its shock value.
Well, I agree with most of what you're saying. I do want to add, though, she's already done that on a couple different occasions, and she's already answered some pretty slanderous comments. And now, I mean, they're still digging. And what hurts me for this woman more than anything is that some of the diggers started out commiserating with her. Some of the biggest slingers now are people that are involved in this particular adoption versus birth parents and all this kind of a scenario, for different reasons, albeit. I'm not going to say that they all have the same kind of a situation going on, but for other reasons they're involved in it, and everybody has a point of view. But what bothers me is she is the mom. She is the mom. And quite frankly, I gave birth to four kids, and I'm a pretty decent person. But have I done stupid things? You bet your bazoo I've done stupid things. Have I always been what would be considered the perfect mom? No way in hell have I been that. And not for lack of trying a good majority of the time, but still faltering through lots of different stories and situations. So this means that she, carrying and giving birth the way God intended for us to reproduce, has had more scrutiny and more slander and more crap slung at her than the people who paid to adopt this little boy. Now, for me, that's like nonsensical. I mean, you don't even, how does it even make sense that you would take the birth mother who has that right because she carried you, she had you. Now, I'm not saying, and I've said this a million times, and I will probably say it a million more in my lifetime, having a child does not make you a mother. I know that. I know that firsthand. However, once a decision was made in this case, this is all to protect the guilty. Not her, this adoption agency. They're the one with the bottomless pockets. They're the ones that can fight and fight and fight and fight. And for what? I don't get this, but when you talk about bullying, I can't even make up a bigger bully story than this. Can you, Shelley?
Well, I've seen things like that. Well, because a baby's involved, no. But we see this kind of stuff in big businesses all the time where somebody in power, basically puts somebody in a lesser position in untenable situations where they're either going to lose their job or have to do things that they don't agree with or that they don't find ethical. You know, so you see other types of bullying that make it very stressful for people to get out of bed in the morning and go about their day. It is the hardest here, though, because you're talking about a child. You're talking about your family. You're talking about, you know, she feels incomplete now, and there's nothing harder than that.
Well, and every time, I guarantee you, because I know me, too, every time she hugs one of the other five kids, she feels like a traitor. If you're not a mom, I don't know whether you can relate to that, Shell, or not. Maybe if you put it on, I think maybe during the hardships between you and your sister, I would imagine there were times when you felt really even just close to me and often felt like a traitor to Nina, even when you were still mad at her, because there's something about that that sticks with us, especially those of us who love very deeply. And I can imagine that every time she does something or sees the look on the face of one of the littler kids, that's the first thing she thinks about, like she's been a traitor to the baby. And I get
that.
You can understand that feeling, right?
Of course, sure. You know, because here she is, or it's making her more thoughtful of the baby because she's seeing her older kids now and they're safe and they're getting love and support from her, and it increases her desire to be able to be there in that way for her other child.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And you get it's like a really loud pang in your heart when you feel that way, a really, really loud pang. And so, again, I mean, we've talked about, and we have both experienced workplace bullying, which is not good for your morale, is not good for your sense of well-being at all. But losing a job versus losing a child is uncomparable. I mean, it shouldn't even be said in the same sentence, to be honest with you. And yet, we both know the trauma that puts us through and the bullying that's done, the fact that somebody else gets to look back at a decision you made, like the politicians. Instead of saying again, and I said this during the presidential debate, which is coming up again very soon, that I don't care what they did bad before. Can we please hear about what they're going to do good this time? I don't care what they did 25 years ago. I don't care that Bill Clinton was a womanizer. His wife knew he was a womanizer. She's the only one that should be pissed about that. I don't care. I want to know why I want you running the world I live in, where my children live, where my grandchildren live, where my great-grandchildren live, what you're going to do to make it better. Why do I care what you did before? I don't. I want to hope that all those stupid things you did before taught you to be smarter.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Right?
Yep.
I want to believe you're still looking for a leadership role in the world I live in. I want to believe that all those stupid things you did taught you a lesson and you're smart enough to learn from your lessons. Otherwise, I don't care to know what you did. How is that? How does that directly affect me and mine? It doesn't. And yet, every debate you listen to, every controversy, well, he stole millions of dollars from so-and-so and her and him and them and they, and oh, my God. So, you know, Buddy was successful because he's still standing up there and he's still got a whole lot more money than I do, and I'm not going to listen to somebody else's assessment of somebody, of how somebody else made their money, because it's never going to be true, Shelley. Never. Might have a hint of truth, but it's never really going to be true. Never. Because it's somebody else's point of view. But this deal with them digging, I mean, they know when she... you know, she was in college. They've even talked about when she didn't finish a class and all this. And I'm like, oh, my good God, what has that got to do with anything? I text her and I said, understand that when you face off with somebody that has a public image to protect, every skeleton in your closet is invited to come to the party, every one of them. And there isn't any of us that don't have them. But what we need is more of us who think like me and Shelley. I don't care what you did before. I mean, unless, you know, you murdered 15 people or something like that and hid their bodies in your basement. I really don't want you running our world if you've been doing stuff like that. But all the other crap, why is it? Why does it have anything to do with us?
Well, see, they're taking normal foibles that everybody has gone through. I mean, the most pure among us have had a night where you got drunk and maybe drove a car. I don't anymore, but when I was younger, I did, you know. So, and I made it through to now, you know, by the grace of God. But I could have been like anybody else that got arrested for driving drunk and getting in an accident. Thank God I never had to face that. But it wasn't because I never drove drunk. It was just because, as far as I'm concerned, I had an angel watching me. And I got through those years that I was irresponsible in that regard. You know, but it's like, you know, they're picking out things from her past that we've all done. We've all, you know, I've taken classes and not finished them. So what? It's a big frickin' so what? People change their minds. They can't finish for this reason or that. But they're making it salacious. They're making it sensational, like these things are showing a character flaw in her. Meanwhile, I'd like to find somebody reading these articles who haven't done the same things at one point in their lives. Does that mean they're not fit to be parents? Does that mean they're not respectable people now? You know? Unless it's something that she's every night of the week and you know, and they're, you know, it's repetitive behavior and, it, you know, she has something that's making her unfit as a mother or something like that. It's all nonsense. It's just mudslinging. And if people aren't aware enough to realize it's mudslinging and not respond to it or get offended by it, that's kind of what a lot of people do. They get into sensationalistic news. Personally, I don't. I find it offensive, and I think it insults my intelligence. The more sensationalistic the news is, the more it pisses me off, because I think it's one-sided, and it's trying to mess with my intelligence. So if I don't hear both sides of a story, I don't like reading sensationalistic stories for that reason, because I feel like somebody's trying to manipulate my reaction to the facts. And I would rather hear the cold hard facts without a lot of conjecture and emotion behind it.
Well, there's a famous Catholic phrase that all my aunts and uncles and my parents always used, and it goes, "There but for the grace of God go I," which means
right.
we have all faltered. We have all made mistakes, each and every one of us. So we are out of time completely. So I want to wish everybody a great day. And remember, try not to judge everybody. Judge yourself first and then see if you have the right to judge somebody else. I think we'd be a lot better off if we all remembered that today. But God bless everybody. Have a great one. And we will be back tomorrow. And I hope Shelley is going to talk to us about our poor zoo animals.
Yep.
So have a good one. Yep. God bless. Bye-bye.
Everyone, have a great day.